the Kitchen Nightmares podcast. Join us, if you will, through a journey of bad food and somehow worse reality television. However, once again, it's me, your old pal, the original beef of County Westmeath, Kevin Mahon. Joined as I am always by my saucy side dishes, my co-host, if you will, Adam Bibelow a la mode. I'm talking ice cream on the sides.
You know what? I like that one.
Yeah?
I think 10 episodes in, we finally hit on something that I'm okay with here.
I can't think of anything that wouldn't be good with ice cream on the sides.
You can't think of anything that would be good with ice cream
on the sides. No, that wouldn't be good.
Oh, yeah, exactly right.
Afterwards, what?
Mustard.
Mustard.
Gravy.
But,
okay, you're not thinking meals, you're thinking sauces.
Yeah, okay.
But in this situation, the ice cream's on the side, so I'll just take the ice
exactly.
cream.
I'll leave
the mustard. They can take that back.
Yeah.
You want to weigh a little bit, have a milkshake later on.
No.
There you go. It'll melt. It'll be fine. And to my right, the sauciest of side dishes, I'm talking about Pom Joanna. Now, that's a very good side dish, I'm just saying right there.
That's a good one. Thank you. Hello.
Hi, how are you doing today, Joe?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you both doing?
A little queasy, but good.
Aww, yeah. Good. Then I've done my job.
Yes. Today, Joe has picked our episode du jour.
For this, I went to Google and I typed in episodes of Kitchen Nightmares where Gordon gets sick.
Uh-huh.
And there was lists for people like me, the sickos.
Yes, freaks.
Yeah, who want to see him throw up.
Now, I'm pretty sure this has happened before where your first choice was one where Gordon got sick that you'd already done.
The first four we'd already done.
There's going to be nothing left inside of him by the end of your episodes.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that I don't think Gordon's ever been sick on Kitchen Nightmares. We never see it. It's always just he leans over a bin and goes, and then it cuts to ad breaks. Like, we've never seen him throw up.
This is why we love L.A. Beast so much, because probably after watching all this Kitchen Nightmares, we've got, like, sick blue balls.
Yep.
We're like, God, I need to see someone get sick.
And boy, you can see it off that guy.
Yes, you can.
Never has the term sick freak been more apt to describe.
Yeah, us.
A couple of sick freaks.
Yeah, sick freaks.
A couple
yeah.
of sick freaks who are freakishly into sick.
Not like that.
Not like that. Come on. This is It's Raw, not subculture. Okay?
So I've got a little kitchen nightmare I can share with you guys here today. It's something that, at the moment in time, it seemed like a bad thing. But in retrospect, I've actually gotten a little nostalgic for this kitchen nightmare in question.
Okay.
So this one concerns the good old days of the global pandemic.
Okay.
Where myself and Joanna, like most of the Western seaboard, decided to rewatch all of The Sopranos, which features in it quite a lot of sliced, delicious, cold meats.
Yes.
We all enjoy... anyone got a favourite one out of favourite sliced cold meat?
Straight up prosciutto, baby.
Oh,
Joe, how
so
about
good.
You? What was your fave?
I feel like this is just recency bias, but I'm going to go with Capo.
Oh!
Which is like...
Fucking A.
Oh, it's so good.
And me, I love mortadella, a.k.a. hipster Billy Roll.
What's mortadella?
What?
It's basically...
Never had it.
Oh,
what?
It's so good. You can get it at Morrison's.
Well, this podcast is not affiliated in any way with Morrison.
Yes, as evidenced by the next Kitchen Nightmare story, which takes place in Morrison. Yes.
Oh, is this a deli counter nightmare?
It's a deli counter encounter indeed. Mm. Now, I'm very fortunate to be married to someone with straight up deli counter experience in Joe over here, who has manned the turntables of the spinning blades that give us those wafer thin cuts that you can see through on a good sunny day.
Yeah, I'm meat slicer certified.
Certified. That don't come willy-nilly, let me tell you.
Most people are not meat slicer certified. When I got employed at a second deli counter, even though there were people who'd been working there for years and were people in their 50s, me, an 18-year-old, was the only person who was legally allowed to work the deli counter.
Folks, Joey's waving the certificate at us right now, and it is printed on Parma ham, I can tell you.
I always figured that was one of those things that, like, the older people, if they got injured on it, they wouldn't survive it. But you were young, so you could take a meat slicing injury. And Randy the Ram could barely make it through it. You would have taken two or three of those, and you'd been fine, I would imagine, in your younger years. But anyway, it was coming up to the end of our Sopranos rewatch, and I decided what would be a better idea than to get a big old spread, get some vinegar peppers, get some prosciutto, get all the good stuff in. We'll watch the last episode of The Sopranos, and right at the very, very end, I take all the food away with no explanation. We'd end the meal at that point in time. Spoiler for the end season finale of The Sopranos. So I went down to Morrison's, which is the only place nearby that has an active deli counter.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a few of those ones, like, we've got an Asda that has, like, a deli counter that no one is behind it.
No, it's a gutted out thing that has maybe some warm pizzas at the front, and nothing else.
Like Tesco's got those like compartmentalized ghost towns.
Yeah.
It's just a deli. There used to be a butcher here years ago. Some say he still haunts this place. So I went in, I was like, okay, I've got some bits and bobs here I've picked up. I got some olives, got some nice cheese maybe, you know, got a big old bread I'm going to dunk in olive oil. And the person behind the counter, I went up to him and I said, hey, can I get a few slices of that big ass Parma ham that you got there? They had the proper fancy bone in, you know, the legitimate real deal. It's what drew me to it. And I got the very scared look of someone who may or may not have been, I assume they were, meat slicer certified.
There's a difference though, because yes, you need to be certified to use the meat slicer, but you have to be good to use it well. And I will say, when I worked at the deli, Parma ham was always the one that I was most scared of.
You go thin, right?
You go thin, and the trick with the meat slicer is you have to push the meat into the slicer while like pulling your hand underneath in the direction the meat is falling. It takes a lot of skill. It's like rubbing your tummy and patting your head.
I thought it was like kind of professional wrestling. If you attack the mat, you have to hit it with all your force.
It is like that.
You got to attack the meat, otherwise it'll attack you back.
It's frightening though, because you are pushing your hand towards very sharp, fast blades. Yeah.
So what happened here was
Did you get some fingers in your hand by any chance?
Thank God, no. But we got the nearest most tragic thing that involved any grievous bodily harm, which was this person turning what appeared to be extremely expensive meat into pink candy floss.
Whoa!
As it came out in these very thin, spirally ribbons, it went every direction. They like started sweating profusely. They went as red as the Parma ham. They started like kind of gathering the spools of pink wool that they had made, and they started apologizing profusely because they're like, "It's not meant to look like that, is it?" And
I'm
like,
no!
And I didn't want to be like, "Excuse me, you'll get them out." I was just like, "Oh no, dear, it's okay, please." I was like, "Gordon, like, oh no, dear, sweetheart, please,
calm, darling, it's fine.
It's okay, it's fine." The manager from behind the counter sees this and comes over and says they should start again. And all that
such a waste of that expensive meat.
Yeah, I was gonna say, right?
And all that happened was they did the exact same thing again as the manager stood with their hands and their hips going, yeah, I'm not really sure what you're meant to do.
Oh my God, how does no one know how to use a meat slicer in this world?
So they kind of gathered it all together.
Put it on a stick.
They kind of they pressed it down.
Squished into an envelope.
They folded into the envelope. I don't think they charged me by weight, but it was like, here you go, it's £4.
Take it away.
Take it away, get out of here, speaking this to no one. And when I came back to my meat slicer certified then fiance, and I was like, hey, yeah, I've got that meat that you ordered, except it's in a different format. It's somewhere between a solid and a gas now. And it was somewhat disappointing. And yet... Having Parma ham that dissolves upon contact with the tongue.
Oh, I don't know.
In a big, messy spool. There's no... it's so hard to pull those slices apart when it's a spool of
but that's
meat wool.
Get some scissors and cut off a corner.
Yeah.
The problem is they didn't layer it. And that's the other trick to Parma ham slicing, is you have to layer it between sheets of plastic.
This was compressed like chewing tobacco. You get a plug of it and stick it in your gob.
It's like Parma ham meatloaf.
So yeah, at the time, kitchen nightmare. In retrospect, nostalgia, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of want some of that. I don't know if anyone's got a meat slicer that they're confident enough to use but not confident enough to cut Parma ham with. Hit me up. Maybe we can make some magic happen.
I will happily tell anyone how to use a meat slicer properly, because I'm one of those annoying freaks now where if I go to a deli, I will be like, right, that's Parma ham. Can you put that on the number one, please?
Oh,
whoa,
look.
Wow.
And they'll immediately
whoa.
Like, oh, fuck,
oh,
she wants
my
it
God.
Really thin. I can't do that. It's so hard. But it's like,
oh,
but that's,
here she comes.
That's the correct setting. You should be able to look through the Parma ham like a stained window.
Folks, this is a new TV show right here. Joe Graham's Deli Counter Nightmares. And I should go around the nation, tell them how it's done.
And I want to worship in a house of God that's got meat stained glass windows. That sounds fantastic. So, from the heady days of Salford to Lancaster, California, where we're looking at the oldest restaurant in the city, it's Casa Roma, which is coming up on its 50-year anniversary. And this is one of the most cursed ways that someone could come into possession of a restaurant. Someone was doing very well in the world of real estate and decided, heck, I'll buy this local institution. So Nyla and her son Jeremy buy in on the aging restaurant and immediately find themselves in over their heads. Is this the most cursed way, other than a haunted restaurant being left to you in your grandfather's will? Is this the most cursed way of coming into a restaurant?
That we've seen so far, yeah. Because it was already a failing restaurant. It's not like they bought a very successful restaurant and ran it into the ground.
Yeah.
And we should say it's Nyla and her son Jeremy, neither of which have got any experience in the hospitality industry whatsoever. They just decided, let's buy this failing restaurant that we know nothing about how to run.
They seem to suggest that Nyla's only work experience was at a grocery store.
Yeah, I don't know where this real estate business comes from.
Yeah, me neither.
It was real estate, then it was,
very briefly at the start. I don't know if she means, like, I had property that was doing well, maybe.
I don't know, that what I gathered from it was that it was her husband who was in real estate and then they divorced and she got a bunch of money from it.
Right.
But I don't know if that is the case or not because they kind of skim over it.
Because later on, they basically, Gordon is like, what were you doing right before you owned this place? And she's like, I was working in a grocery store around the corner. Yeah. Like,
you wouldn't have enough money from just, you know, working in a grocery store in the corner to buy this very big restaurant.
But she definitely, you know, because she said that she was a stay-at-home mum for most of her life. So any money that she would have had significantly wise to invest in a restaurant, I think would have come from her ex-husband.
Mm. Oh, so you reckon this some sort of a property empire was on the back
maybe,
burner
yeah.
here or something like
also,
that.
Also, we don't know much about son Jeremy, but she
That's
bought
true.
It with him. He could have contributed a fair bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, now they do mention, you know, at one point the idea of buying him out. So he's not just kind of, oh, I'm here to help. He is a partner in the business.
Yes.
Yeah.
And yeah, it does come up later on, but I think it's worth bearing mentioning at the start, as Joe said there, she got divorced after many, many years, and literally within 12 months, she jumped into this restaurant.
Mm.
And we're not late enough in the seasons of Kitchen Nightmares where Gordon's bringing the family psychologist out.
No.
But is it safe to say that she perhaps was burying herself in an ordinarily large amount of work after the breakup period had festered?
Seemingly, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so Joe, give me the lowdown. What's the layout? This very unique restaurant, because it's not just a restaurant, mind.
No, it's not, and thank God for them, because they would have gone out of business long ago if it was just a restaurant. It's a restaurant and bar, and the bar is very successful, makes, you know, a good amount of money, it's always busy, good turnover, but the restaurant does not do well. It's normally empty. On a slow night, they make $9 an evening.
Fucking hell! Do you sell, like, sell half a main course for
I
that?
Know.
The idea of two businesses being joined up like that is very, very fascinating. Near to us in Swinton, there was a hairdresser's that had a door that went through into a sandwich shop.
Yeah.
And I can tell you,
oh no!
As apprehensive as I was to get my hair cut there, I was even more apprehensive to get a sandwich next door. And in my childhood home of Delvin in Westmeath, we had, of course, Bala Haws, which was the newsagents / grocery store that also had a dive bar attached onto it. So you'd come in as a kid on your summer holidays with 50p right by an iceberg, you have to ring a bell, a door would open, you'd see an old man go with his pint of Guinness, and then someone would come in like wiping a glass going, I'm sorry you had to see that, do you want an ice cream, is this, yeah, the under the same roof.
Wow,
very impressive. This is a dive bar? Is that I don't know how to use that term correctly because it sounds snobbish and mean.
Well, it's normally when you say dive, you just mean shithole, like a sort of a dank kind of Moe's Tavern style bar.
But Adam, the dank!
This is kind of like that. Like when they say bar, it is in like everyone is sat at the bar surrounded. It's all regulars and all locals.
There's a jukebox and no windows.
And it's kind of like that sort of very boisterous kind of bar. Like, it's loud and rowdy in there, which is the last thing you want to have joined up to your dining area.
Yeah.
Like.
And on top of the fact that they only seem to make $9 a night, they've had
comically low wages.
It would be better if they made nothing.
Yeah.
Like.
But on top of that, they have massive chef turnover where in the space of 2 years, now I think this was weird phrasing because they said in the space of 2 years, they had over 20 chefs, but the chef they have now, they've had for 1 year. So that's 20 chefs in 1 year and then one chef in 1 year.
And let me tell you, head chef Eric, when they first ask a member of staff what his main problem is, the waitress goes, Chef Eric, he lacks getting the food out.
Okay, that's a component of being a head chef, for sure.
This lad, immediately, as soon as I locked eyes on him, I was like, he's a chancer. This lad here, he is the Kitchen Nightmares equivalent of a cowboy builder.
Yes, 100% he is.
Like, this is the type of chef where he's laser focused on finding these types of restaurants where there is going to be no service, where there will be $9 of turnover, because this guy can only exist in a place where he doesn't have to cook.
Yeah, you order a sandwich and he's like, I don't know, mate, I'm going to have to order these ingredients in. It's going to be at least a couple of weeks before I can make you that.
We also have a sous chef, Drew.
Drew the Sioux.
He seemed semi-competent.
He did, yeah.
He did, but he's at the very start already spiritually broken. Yeah. Like, they're talking to him and he's like, just, you know, working with Eric, man, he doesn't talk to me at all. Like, he looks like he's already done with this place.
Gordon shows up and...
Emphasis on shows up.
Yeah, he jump cuts.
No driving, he just apparates outside the restaurant.
And pretty much the first thing he does after introducing himself is point at the carpet, where he says, "Is that blood?"
And the camera pans down to a white stain on the floor.
Well, there's white blood cells and red blood cells, guys, obviously.
What does Gordon's blood look like that is what he thinks blood is?
Well, it's not like your blood and my blood, no. Joe. He's different from the rest of us, easily.
I mean, he's more AI than man. That's nowadays, true. So I don't think he even has blood at this point.
Like, he doesn't have blood in the way that Sims don't have blood.
Feels
you know?
Like Gordon's blood might be a bechamel sauce.
Maybe.
Yeah, like an artificial plasma or something.
Yeah, like the stuff that those androids in Alien.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it is white.
Do right, we have an official agreed upon It's Raw podcast term for the Gordon? It's the backhand chop into the palm. Because he actually cut himself. Like, when he appeared, it was like 3, 2, 1. Like
he cut his, like, he was wearing a ring and he cut his hand open.
I mean, he would. I can't do too many more of those. But it's different from the he punches things, but then he does the backhand into the palm.
Yes.
And he punctuates everything, and you'll get the. A few of those in a row. But is it the Gordon chop? Can we call it that?
It's not really a chop. Makes me think side of the hand. Yeah. This is the back of the palm.
A Gordon beat?
Clap?
A Gordong?
I'm going to officially put this out to the It's Raw community. Yeah. I would like some suggestions, please. Yeah.
There has to... It's used so much. He has to... Because they're going to say to him, Gordon, can you blank more? Like,
yeah,
because he obviously here he's dialed up, ready to go.
I think the producers are always like, Gordon, can we just bring it down just like a couple of notches?
So Gordon is brought straight into not the restaurant but the bar itself,
mm-hmm.
which made it feel like he'd walked into the wrong show. Like, because this is all these people sat around drinking beers, smoking cigarettes, looking at him side eyes. Like, this ain't like bar rescue. Like, what are you doing here? Like, go away. Time. For a taste. I could fucking taste the carpet. It looked so bad. Like, it was one of those situations where I think that carpet predated the last 2 or 3 sets of owners, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know? He sits at a booth, a leather booth, that becomes an abyss.
The first thing he does when he sits down is reach down the back of the cushion, like, let's see what we got here then. And he finds...
Such a Joe episode. Like, finds, not even near the food and he's looking for gross stuff.
Like crusty old citrus, like bits of lime and tissue. He pulls them out of the cushion and puts them on his table and he goes, damn, there's crusty bits of lime and tissue on my table. You put them there! We saw you
the
put
worst
them
thing
there.
About when he does that is when he always takes out the gross bit of food and then the server comes, he's like, darling, if you could just... And she like puts it in her hand and like, oh yeah, sure.
I'll
and
take that.
She no walks away like it's an order or something like that. And we also have major issues with the menu as well, Joe.
Yeah, there's a typo on the menu. It's supposed to say fine Italian dining. And instead it says, fine Italian, dinning.
Ah, you know what it is? I think this is 2008 and the Charlie Sheen cultural moment. Mm. Everyone's talking about winning.
Dinning.
So dinning, obviously.
Hashtag dinning.
Hashtag dinning, man.
Gordon points this out to the wait staff, who are like, have never noticed it before.
No
one has spotted this spelling error.
No one's ever seen this.
No one's given this menu like it the full attention of actually looking at it with both eyes.
Yes.
And I think there is a deep-rooted shame. Everyone is kind of... like. There's usually a zealot in one of these episodes where it's like, this place is great, it's good. Everyone is like either ashamed or embarrassed or just angry about this place.
Yeah. No one cares.
I feel like there's a ghost here who's like, I started this restaurant and it's their fault. They're angry at them.
Gordon's looking around and he notices there's something on the blinds. What's on the blinds?
I mean, first of all, those blinds were those weird fucking metallic office blinds.
Yeah.
Not good for a restaurant.
There's shit on the blinds.
Oh, there's shit on the blinds.
Now, does Gordon say shit flippantly, like, ah, look, shit all over the floor?
I think so.
Or is he like, oh, someone has...
defecated.
This is excrement.
Yeah.
86 the blinds. Now, I'm going to say this now, and we're not going to talk about it for a while, but I feel it's kind of in line with the experience that Gordon has here. It's time to have some food. Course 1 is the stuffed mushrooms. Now, we'll come back to that in quite a bit, because it's going to be a long time before that food makes any sort of an appearance.
Yeah, we cut to the kitchen and Eric is already out for a cigarette, clocking off.
At that point, Gordon's been waiting 35 minutes. Jesus, and the chef's like, yep, off for my break, bye.
Man, this guy was such a cartoon character. Seriously. The first thing he says is, they say this guy's got 5-star Michelin star chef, which means he's got 4 tires and a spare. Kiss my ass.
What?
Like, I love when someone's a motormouth, but when there's like no rhyme or reason and it's just like tossed word jambalaya coming out.
He just knows he's going to be fired within the next 3 days. Yeah. So he's just like getting defensive ahead of time here.
Gordon starts to get impatient and starts taking apart all the chairs. So it seems like his chair that he was sitting on was wobbly.
Mm-hmm.
So he starts disassembling the furniture and he notices that the chair he's on is all broken. Now, it could be actually broken, or it could be the fact that he was just like smashing it and was like, oh no, look, it's broken now.
Look, it's weak as hell.
You know it's bad when the food takes so long, Gordon changes trades in between. Yeah. If I were a carpenter and you were a big boy, would you marry me anyway? Yeah, he's done a pretty good job on it though. You know?
Yeah, he takes apart his chair and then he goes off and he takes apart some of the other chairs and then he puts the other parts of the chair where he was sitting so his chair isn't broken anymore, but the other ones probably are still fucked. And yeah, it's still no food. 45 minutes.
Good God.
This is the point where I was like, 45 minutes, we're reaching, I think, the maximum amount of time I've ever waited for food.
So, perfect time for a run, then.
Yeah, cheeky Gordon, having a little jog around the restaurant.
I'm training for a marathon.
Yeah. Is everyone looking?
Look, something kind of weird and manic about this.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, like, if I didn't know any better, I would have said someone told him to do this, but he definitely decided to do this himself.
This is how you know for a fact he was legitimately waiting for 45 minutes, because he's gone a little bit mad in the process.
And there's no one else here as well, so...
Completely empty. Know,
just him and the ghosts.
With the outdoor voice.
We cut to the kitchen and we find out that part of the delay is the chef wants to wait for all of Gordon's food to be ready at the same time.
That's how it works.
So strange.
Well, what we do in this restaurant is a little bit different. We call them large plates. we want each order like one, and we all comes out at the same time. So, Gordon is a full hour in. He is asleep.
He's
tired. He ran around, didn't he?
They bring the food out and Gordon's got his head back pretending to be asleep. And the server just puts it out in front of him and doesn't make a comment. And he's like... I was nodding off there. She went, yeah, I know, I saw. Yeah, very good, very good.
So we start off with the stuffed mushrooms.
Here we are.
The mushrooms are stuffed with crab.
Can I just say, stuffed mushrooms, one of my all-time... I love stuffed mushrooms. I love mushrooms so much.
Mm-hmm.
But they're cheap and cheerful. Crab is a filling, though. This is one of these things where I wasn't even sure that if someone really, like... passionate and competent made it. I'm not sure if I'd want crab inside a mushroom.
Oh, I'd eat that, yeah.
You reckon?
Sounds like a nice combo.
Seafood and mushrooms is one of those forbidden ones, though, isn't it?
Is it?
Crab is different, though.
It's shellfish, I guess. So, yeah, they're soggy, they're full of water, or what I suspect is poison.
It's weird, though, because they are soggy, but they look really dry before he squeezes them like a lemon.
So, I think what's happened here is these were stuffed and deep fried in the past... then frozen, then re-deep fried.
That's
the only way you can get that kind of turn it from the skin into a hide.
Yeah.
You know? You basically tanned these mushrooms, for lack of a better term. And like, yeah, I don't know for sure because I'm not 100% on food safety and all that, but I would assume due to the water content of the mushrooms and them being kind of slightly delicate that it's not the type of thing that you could freeze whole with something inside without it going kind of haywire when you defrost it.
It could also be the fact that maybe they washed the mushrooms in water, which you're not supposed to do.
Yeah, big no-no.
Well, there's a lot of back and forth on that now.
Really?
Okay. To the point where I would say, I ain't fucking washing mushrooms, hell no, but like, if someone's out there washing mushrooms, I'm not going to like come at them. Like I would have maybe a year ago.
Get rid of all the excess water.
You put them in a mushroom spinner and spin around as fast as you can.
I did see someone do that.
For
but
fuck's sake.
Also, as well, if you just keep cooking them longer. But like, I've also heard people saying, oh, not only should you wash them, you should boil them.
Oh, and what?
And then fry them. Look, I just want to eat mushrooms, okay?
Right?
So as few steps between that and me eat you them as possible, please.
While Gordon is squeezing these mushrooms, Nyla, the owner, is hiding behind a saloon door with her ear pressed against it to, like, spy on him. But it's a saloon door, so you can see her feet under the bottom. It's pretty obvious.
She had the cheeky grin of someone who was excited and had never seen an episode of Kitchen Nightmares before.
Yeah.
She's like, I can't wait for him to eat the food and save my business. Course number two, which it appears on the pass and makes the sous chef go, what the fuck is that thing? Thank you for sending me the uncensored version, Joe,
yes,
by the way.
Welcome.
It was worth it for that moment. It's a Monte Cristo sandwich.
Well, that's what it's supposed to be.
I feel Monte Cristo's come up a lot in this show.
Yeah, but everyone on the staff refers to it as a Monte Crisco. Crisco being like a brand of lard, I believe, that you can get in America, and everyone calls it that, like, consistently.
Now, I know this comes out at the same time as the next course, but let's talk about the courses individually.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, yeah.
So the Monte Cristo, which comes out, served with fries, covered in powdered sugar.
What?
It's a deep fried sandwich. Gordon balks immediately at it, and he's like, what the hell is all this sugar on here? Now, that's how it's meant to be served.
What, with sugar?
With sugar.
Really?
And not just with sugar. Most Monte Cristos, classically done the American style, you serve it with strawberry or raspberry jam and sugar.
Come off it, America. What's going on?
So it's basically, it's meant to be like a croque monsieur, like an egg dipped or in some cases a batter dipped ham and cheese sandwich.
But that was not
deep
what
fried.
They did here.
And then you top it with the powdered sugar.
Powdered sugar on a sandwich.
But it's because in the same way that, you know, you'll have, you know, your, it's a breakfast sandwich.
I know, like bacon and syrup and all that.
The sweet,
I get
the savory.
That.
And it's weird for us, but like Gordon was like, do people like this? Ew. But I'm like, okay, no doubt that is a revolting example of a Monte Cristo. But the issue of it having powdered sugar, I just wanted to say that as far as I was aware, that's how it's meant to be served.
There's a lot of it on
there.
There
is a lot of it on there.
It is caked.
Like, Gordon blows the sugar off and it's like a puff of dust just everywhere around him. Also, it's not, it was deep fried, but not in like batter or anything. It's just, we see it in the fryer and it's just sitting there floating
it's
on top.
Covered in oil, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, I love a deep fried thing.
Oh yeah, me too.
And I even love slightly more grease than I probably should.
Yeah.
But this was like, yeah, this was just making my stomach turn.
Because it leads to us getting, please insert the sound here, whichever one of us edits it, Gordon squeezes the sandwich and we get the proper...
Is that popular?
No.
Jesus. It's actually dripping. Fat.
Ew.
Squelching.
He does a Kevin and he turns it into an orb.
He literally does.
I mean, look, if you're going to orb, all I'll say, orb carefully.
Yeah.
Don't orb anything.
Mm.
Yeah, because you're going to wreck your trousers.
Yeah.
You probably get scalded in hot oil.
I was going to say, deep fat fried food should not be orb, right?
Absolutely not. So, yes, it is not a particularly good example. I don't think he actually eats it.
I didn't see him take a bite.
Anything, yeah.
And as well, like, if you're going to orb something and then not eat it, that is so, like, you can barely get away with orbing anything these days, but with political correctness and all
They're
that.
They're in jail.
So, yes, very goopy sound effects indeed. Out comes the pizza, which I believe was the deluxe Casa Roma pizza.
Mm-hmm. It looks amazing.
Visually.
Mm-hmm.
If you squint, maybe, if I take my glasses off, that's a nice looking pizza.
If I fiddle with the settings on the TV, I could maybe.
I thought it looked nice.
Look, all I'll say, Joe, is there's very few pizzas that are nice that look like they can be stirred in the middle. Like, that look like hot soup.
Okay, once he takes the topping off and stuff like that, the dough is completely raw.
It's raw.
It's raw.
Like wallpaper paste, he describes it, which is, again, like, I hate all sorts of gross things in this podcast, but, like, I've had
wallpaper paste. Because I will admit, the times I've done wallpapering with my dad, I've always been like, that does, there's something about it. There's something about
it. It's like Ready Breakfast.
A little bit.
No, I remember way back, when I was, 10 or 11, we, got one of those, in-store baked breads from Super Value.
Mm-hmm.
And the inside of it, it was you get those breads, they're so squidgy. It's like the food from Good Burger. They press a button in the machine, this big wobbly yolk comes out.
Yeah.
So it was kind of squidgy. And then my parents were like, I don't think that's fully cooked. And I was like, oh, really? And I just maybe where I get my orbs
you
from.
You orbed it.
I orbed it. And I was like, I'll take a slightly doughy bread when I'm 11 and weird. Mm. But this is liquid. So yeah, pretty much bad vibes all around. The food looked dangerous.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
I get that they were saving the walk-in for the big reveal later on, but this is one of these times where I was like, you could tell Gordon knew what was coming, so he was extra trepidatious in what he was about to actually put in his mouth. But even still, this man was poisoning himself for the benefit of the viewing public. Mm-hmm. So a little bit of respect there for Gordon. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to deny him that. He did eat a bite of that pizza, is what I'm saying.
Did he?
He did.
He did. He had a little bit. I mean, we can't deny Gordon doesn't shy away from gross stuff like that. He will eat a little bit of bad food and he will get his fingers right in whatever muck he finds.
He loves touching it.
Like, he's not icky in that sense. No. He doesn't get yucked out by things in that way.
So, Eric, the head chef, gets confronted and is asked, how come you didn't put in a little bit more effort, considering there's a celebrity filming a reality show for the 50th anniversary of your restaurant? And he goes, I didn't know whose you were. Is he quiet quitting, or can you not do that when you're a gross old man?
No, he's loud quitting, I think. Like, he says, it was a bad fucking day, pal, and he storms off with a cigarette. Like,
yeah, Gordon is, I think, caught genuinely off guard by how motor-mouthed this particular chef is.
Gordon goes outside to kind of like reassure him a bit, because again, early on in the episode, we have Gordon bringing out the big guns of like, it's okay, come on, big man.
Yeah, he does the heart-to-heart like immediately. Yeah.
Very quickly.
And then the chef goes, I'm not going to give you any excuses, and proceeds to give many excuses as to why he did a bad job.
Now, did anyone pick up on Chef Eric's special phrase that he used about getting back on his feet? Because there's only one thing he needed to steady this ship, folks.
He's going to reload, baby.
He's got to reload, baby.
He gets one reload, and here it comes.
I just got to reload one time. Just let me reload, man. I got caught flat-footed, Gordon, but once I reload... He says it so much! What is reloading?
Trying again? Give me another pop at it?
I'd argue he didn't try the first time.
Yeah.
We get one of my favourite coming-ups ever on the show here, where the narrator tells us, coming up after the break, Chef Ramsay goes where he's never gone before. The bathroom. He must be backed up something fierce.
He's
man.
He's busted three kidneys already. That's why he moved to America. They wouldn't give him any more of the NHS.
Oh, no.
So it's now time for our official service observation and something of a bad omen. There's just some dude drinking cranberry and vodka hanging around. He's like, oh, big boy, what's your job? Oh, I work in construction.
Yeah, he's Nyla's other son.
Yes.
Jimmy.
Yeah.
He's just kind of there.
Yeah.
He's like, what are you drinking? Cranberry juice. Oh, okay. And vodka.
Why did you offer that bit up? You didn't have to say that.
You got it right the first time. Just lie.
It's the straw. It was the straw that was the giveaway.
And
that's a mixed drink.
Lots of ice as well. Yeah. It's very obviously a mixed drink.
They added in the sound effects when he drinks it going... like cocktail sip 001. Like. And I think it's very funny that Jimmy, not only did he say, yeah, I work in construction, he specified that he operates heavy machinery.
Yeah.
Which is a weird thing to say when you have a mixed drink in your hands.
Lucky for Gordon's respect. This felt like a deleted scene because we never see this guy again. Like, we're not setting anything up here.
He does show up later on.
Does he?
He does. He helps with the calzones later on.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, you're right. Sorry. Yeah,
but
he does step up.
The other son, part owner,
Jeremy.
He's... like, I don't think he says two words in this whole episode.
He's got nothing to contribute.
His hands are washed of this affair, indeed. This is meant to be a service observation, but again, they've not been into the walk-in where they know there's a catastrophe waiting.
Yeah.
So basically what happens is Gordon stands there and groans and grimaces as he looks at the dishes coming out. So he'll just go, where is it? Whereas it's been slowly plated up. But it's somehow more food is coming back than we put out.
People have brought their own food from home to return. Like.
So yeah, Ashley the waitress, she's definitely getting her steps in because she is literally run ragged just returning the food. And bless her, she's already crying at the start of this service. Mm-hmm. I think she's the only one who has any sort of a pride in what she does or can recognise an extremely awkward situation. The head chef... you know, he's just sat there with like 10 plates of food come back to him. 17 plates of food just come in for two tables. He goes, what can you do? You know, what can you do?
What can you do? The food's going to cook itself, so what can you do?
I know. Reload. How about that? Spoken of reloading.
It's so badly run because the chef, the way he's doing these table service things is he's sending out half tables at a time.
Yep.
Instead of being like, right, okay, table 20, they've ordered, you know, five entrees. Let's get them all out together so they can eat at the same time. Instead, he's like, right, let's get three entrees from table 20 and maybe two entrees for table 5. alive.
Has that ever happened to you guys?
Oh, yeah. It is literally...
It's the worst.
We may have talked about it before, but it is, I think, the worst dining experience to have. Yeah. Is when, regardless of if the food's good or bad, just any time someone else's meal comes out and you're left to wait for 10 minutes.
Because it's like a curse to choose your own adventure. It's either A, the person eats their food and they feel guilty and they're like, I'm sorry, I'm really sorry. Or B, the person eats their food, doesn't feel guilty and you're like, why don't they feel bad that they're eating their food and I've not gotten
or,
it yet?
Option C, you just let the food go cold because you're too polite to start eating it. Like.
That's so fucking bad. Yeah, a girl has been waiting at a table for two hours.
Come on.
I think if you added up all of our worst wait times combined, we wouldn't get to 2 hours.
2 hours.
Awful.
Fucking hell. The owners are kind of... just a bit malaise. It's kind of too sad to be angry.
Yeah. It's not clear what they actually do.
They're not like front of house or anything like that.
No, they're not greeting.
They're certainly not cleaning.
No, they're just kind of standing watching.
Yeah,
like.
Very unhelpful.
Ashley starts reading out this like crazy long order. And she's like, what's coming up next, Ashley? 2 eggplant parms, 2 meatball marinaras.
55 hot dogs, 55 hamburgers, 55 french fries, 55 milkshakes.
Yeah, that, except if Tim started crying in the middle of it. It's so sad. It's like no one's going to get their food, are they? It's just 8 tables as well. That's all they have to do. And Gordon just says, do me a favor, close the fucking restaurant.
Oh, he's shutting it down.
86 in the whole damn restaurant. Wow. I don't think anyone actually ate any food, which probably means it's okay that they knowingly served food from this definitely cursed biohazard walk-in that we're going to see any moment. So Gordon, he goes out and has a little heart-to-heart with the owner, Joe.
Yes, he cuts a bit of a promo, I would say, is more than a heart-to-heart.
He's already used his heart-to-heart for this episode.
Yeah, got no more patience. He's like, look, you need to fire Eric.
I love it when he's
15
like,
minutes into the episode.
Some episodes he'll be like, do you think there's any possibility we could maybe get a new headshot? This time he is straight up, you have
to
fire
him.
Either you fire him or I'm going home.
Wait a second, what, can he not box anyone to save his job? No, just fire him.
Nyla's like, where will I find another chef? And then Gordon's like, well, what's wrong with Drew? And she's like, oh, I think Drew can pull it off, actually. So, okay.
I'd never thought of that.
It's time for sous chef to become Drew chef. And the firing with Mr. Reload goes pretty much as well as you expect.
Yep.
He starts off full of piss and vinegar, and then literally immediately, as soon as she's like, yeah, we're gonna part ways, he goes, okay. Damn it.
He doesn't. He says, okay, fuck off.
Mm. Oh, sorry, fuck off.
Yeah, okay, fuck
off. I thought
off.
He said damn it.
Nope.
And Gordon refers to him as possibly the worst chef in America.
I love this. The guy's just been fired and peppered in throughout the rest of the episode. We're still going to get a few more shots in on Eric. Like with that, now he's out of the room and he can't defend himself.
I think we should keep our ears open in future episodes because I know season 3, so relatively, I guess, early doors still. But I didn't think on Kitchen Nightmares US that he would throw around terms like the worst chef in all of America.
He says this is the worst Italian restaurant he's ever been in as well. He is very hot on the hyperbolic statements this week.
Now, we're not getting our standard segments where it's like, it's time for the restaurant observation or time for service. So I'm just going to read out what they said instead. It's time to check out the restaurant properly with no interference.
Oh, because Eric was interfering so much before. Like.
Gordon literally was just going,
standing there.
He's doing nothing. So, yeah, this just means Gordon's going to go straight to fucking hell. He's going into that he's going into that walk-in. Go on then, Joe. Tell us what happened. I had to review Sex Lives of the Potato Men this week, and I've not felt unwell because of my job twice in 1 week ever.
Before you open that walk-in, can I just ask, did we get any spewing from yourself in this episode, Joe?
Sadly not. I didn't find it that bad.
No?
No.
It's pretty grim.
It's pretty bad, but it's not as bad as some of the other ones we've covered.
Fair enough. I'm worried that you're going to get too desensitized before we find the one that will make you throw up.
Well, I was given a sense of nausea that basically moved up a established routine toilet time to 2 hours earlier in the day.
Jesus Christ.
So my rhythms were knocked off by this, you know.
Fucking hell.
That's all I'll say.
So Gordon heads to the walk-in and right away He's slapping all the moldy things.
Literally slapping them.
It's a food pyramid of mold, this.
He finds an ancient lasagna.
Oh.
He finds an avocado so old that Gordon can pull it apart with his bare hands.
Yeah.
And it's empty inside.
What? I think the stone is vacated to go find...
Oh, the stone was there.
The stone was there, but everything else the bugs had gotten to already.
Yeah, the flesh, it's just gone.
He had... all the types of bad beef. He had really old, overcooked beef, and then he had really old, seemingly raw beef in a bowl of red.
A bowl of blood, yeah.
It was the Parma ham that he was particularly upset. He couldn't stop playing with it.
Yeah. Slapping it, stroking it. At one point, he was like, wow, it can even stick to my hand.
This big joint of meat stuck to his palm.
Like, that's obviously upsetting for him in the restaurant trade, because he knows how much that costs, right? Yeah. And I think it's one of these things where it's like, hey, this is meant to be, on the surface, we say it's Italian dinning, so you have to have a Parma ham moment with two M's.
Yeah.
So... this is here, but it's not used. I was really shocked at how I was able to imagine the smell of rancid Parma ham, because Parma ham has that kind of slight funk to it, right? And I could just imagine the way that, you know, blue cheese that goes off, or like, you know, like cheddar that's been left out of it too long, where that funk has went too far.
I was impressed by the fact that the Parma ham was actually moldy, because obviously the way you get Parma ham is you preserve meat in a dry atmosphere and you leave it for like 2 years.
Those are the hardy, hardy bacteria strains we got on there, I guess.
How long had that Parma ham been sitting
there? That's the bacteria you're going to find inside the crater of a volcano or like on the moon.
In a sarcophagus.
But yeah, there was one thing in particular that really got to Gordon. He finds a, I guess you could call it, a rack of ribs.
Yeah.
A torture rack of ribs.
Not clear if they were cooked or raw, but they were certainly falling apart.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ripe meat off the bone. 3 months old. That's them admitting to it.
Yeah.
So it's probably at least 6 months old.
Yeah.
And this is, I think, what causes Gordon to get sick, question mark?
Yeah, well.
It causes him to stand over a bin.
And cough. Yeah.
Yes.
Is he, like, is he trying to will himself to actually get sick, do you think? Do you
think he gangs? So. No, because I think that the network that shows these kind of shows isn't going to show a man being... because these are always airing, like, they premiere in the evening, but they're the kind of thing that's unsyndicated and will be on all day on some channels.
You can't show a man getting sick.
No, I don't think his intent is to actually throw up. It's just the illusion of being sick.
Okay, right. I was going to say, like, if you do want to induce vomiting and make yourself sick... going headfirst into a smelly bin and coughing very loudly is a good way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day in school, if you thought you were going to get sick, I'd be like, oh, I'll go get sick in the toilet. Oh my God.
Yeah.
The toilet is the way to go. Like.
Speaking of the toilet.
Hey!
Surplus to requirements this was. This is not hotel hell.
Yep. It's great.
Surprisingly, the dive bar has got a smelly bathroom.
I love this. We had the fridge walk-in. Mm-hmm. Now we've got the bathroom walk-in.
This is new. This is new. Exclusive.
I feel Gordon should do what he does here with the fridge as well.
And he's reaching into the toilet. Like.
I say he has a black light. And
oh,
he,
you want to take that
in
the walk-in?
I want to take that into the walk-in and see all the bodily fluids. Because, in this toilet we have... we assume to be piss on the walls, all over the walls.
Yep.
Ceiling.
On the
doors.
Ceiling.
Particularly on the handles of everything as well. Yeah. And it's just, you know, I will say, he looked genuinely run down at this point.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, like, whatever, something has gotten to him.
Definitely, because he can't even muster a quip. He sees the sign in the bathroom and he's like, wash your hands. Yeah. Well said, mate. This got me thinking, though, like... that's bad that there's piss on the ceiling. There should never be piss on ceilings.
No.
But as someone that has worked in like food preparation spaces and hospitality, and I've done lots of training on health and hygiene when you're serving food.
Piss is in the toilet, isn't it? Like?
Piss, that's the number one thing they say on the handbook.
Really?
Yeah, piss in toilets.
Oh, shit, okay.
Shit too.
Yeah,
oh
no
God.
Bins, toilet only.
Tell me now.
But no one ever talks about how often are you supposed to clean the ceiling of a food preparation space.
Or a toilet.
Well, toilets should be cleaned pretty regularly, to be
fair.
No, there's definitely something they're saying toilets should be cleaned twice a day and then you have to put your time stamp up there and things like that.
Ceilings.
Those suspended ceilings as well, where it's made of that compressed tissue paper, where it's basically like, hey, bacteria, look at all these nooks and crannies.
You can't mop that.
Yeah, no, that's bad. Gordon takes him into the walk-in for a demented game of Bop It.
Yeah.
Touch it! Smell it! Live it!
Pull it!
Feel it!
Experience it!
And he literally has it saved to one side. Look, it's the avocado from before!
Yeah.
Now you are, and he's like, California, yeah?
Yeah, California.
Big boy, avocados.
Yeah, you have them here. One of the guys goes, oh man, that food is probably about as old as Eric. Would you leave him alone? He's gone now. He's been gone for 2 days.
Yeah, it's probably the worst food in America in the way that Eric is the worst chef in all of America.
Now, I thought Drew, up until this point, came across pretty well.
Yes.
Like, he was able to kind of take responsibility for things and acknowledge when things were bad. But it's almost like the head chef role of Kitchen Nightmares is like, it's like a curse.
Yes.
Where as soon as you become promoted to that level, you have to become extremely defensive.
Yep.
Because Gordon points out the ancient lasagna and Drew starts just lying. He's like, oh, that's from Tuesday? It's not.
It's bad because it's the one thing I think someone's like, oh yeah, Drew, he makes a killer lasagna, man. Like, literally, it'll kill you. It's so old. So yes, not to end the tour of misery there, he brings the staff into the bathroom, which I think seems to be the first time some of them have ever been in there. And Gordon lets them know before he goes in. He goes, biological stains will show up as yellow or green. He turns off the lights and he comes in and goes, green, 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 green. And someone doesn't make it into the bathroom, so the owner has to relay the information. She's like, yeah, someone may have peed on the ceiling. There may be throw up in there as well. Vomit being referred to as throw up is very funny. It's not a verb. It's a thing. Come on now. I'm more impressed and kind of curious at this point at how they've kind of managed to survive without any sort of health code violation or... Like, that happens, right? You get inspected.
Do they inspect the ceiling?
That's it. Are they blacklighting the ceiling like that?
Maybe they just, like, make them think they painted the walls green. Like, it's meant to be like this.
Honestly,
you know?
It makes me want to buy a blacklight and test the ceilings of various toilets I go into.
The trouble is, if you have that power, you're not going to be able to help yourself, your loved ones.
It's a highway to hell right there.
It is, yeah. You're going to put yourself off going around anyone's house.
It's like how Gordon...
I wouldn't do it at a house of a friend. I just mean, like, you know, you go into a restaurant, you're like, okay, let's just check
that's
the
how it starts.
That's how it starts,
that's how it starts.
There were a couple of other little bits and bobs that he pulled out of the kitchen, just to kind of emphasize the grossness is not just in the bathroom. Remember, you're meant to be cooking as well. The one that really confused me was the bucket of ravioli soaking in water.
Jesus Christ.
Like, even like in my university days where people would soak things and I would think, why have you done that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, water is not going to make this anything other than soup. Like, you know what? Mm-hmm. And what's the logic that puts ravioli in water and then... under the sink.
My only possible explanation could be, to save time, we're just going to take that metal tub and put it straight on the hob and start boiling it immediately.
Oh, right, like, I see.
Ravioli goes in water at some point, so we may as well save some time and keep it in there.
Ah, I see. So you're spiting yourself in the present to save yourself in the future.
Exactly.
But it's become some kind of like ravioli slime now.
Yeah, it's thick.
It's own liquid.
Very, very upsetting to me. And of course, at this point, after all of this bullshit and horrible stuff, and we're, you know, minutes are clocking down here, not much time left to save the restaurant, it's now time for the ultimate pizza taste test.
Okay.
There's a bit missing here, right? There has to be a clean the restaurant.
Like, nope. Let's just make food in this space now that we've looked at it.
Use this Parma ham I found.
I love pizza so much. And I'm enthusiastic for pizza literally at any point in time ever.
Mm-hmm.
And this now is not the time, guys, for the ultimate pizza taste test.
This is meant to be the thing of, like, the chef that was a little lower down on the totem pole is going to have to step up, so we're going to give him a confidence boost. We're going to do
responsibility,
a fun activity with Gordon, where Gordon can say lots of nice things about you. And he's trying to, like, psych him up, and he goes, come on, big boy, who runs this kitchen? I mean, I guess I do now.
So what's the nature of this taste test, Joe?
So there's going to be three pizzas given to the owners, Nyla and Jeremy. And it's kind of a trick in a way because two of the pizzas are made by Gordon and Drew. Gordon's making a thin crust and Drew is making a thicker crust. And then there's also going to be the wild card of a frozen pizza.
Oh, that's a Dr. Utker. I noticed that brand new straight away. Mm-hmm.
What's this meant to prove?
I wasn't sure.
It's to prove, it didn't really work, but I think the idea was that then they'd eat the frozen pizza and go, that's the best one. We like that one, please.
Yeah.
But they didn't. They were like,
obviously not.
They're like, well, it's pizza, it's fine, but it's it's not as good as these ones.
He seems so smug about this, yeah. And I don't know what... If they'd been selling frozen pizzas and being like, these are the best, then I understand the point he's trying to make. But the pizzas have always been freshly made, even if they're not good. I don't get what he's getting at here.
Yeah.
And I would say as well, Chef Drew's very thick crust looks kind of... I mean, that could be served to Gordon in another episode of Kitchen Nightmares and he'd piss on it.
This feels to me like the original script for this episode called for, we're going to get Eric to make one of his shit pizzas and we'll put a frozen one next to it.
We ate six of them too quickly.
Eric's already gone, but we've already bought this $2 pizza. We've got to use it now.
Yeah, it was not the worst trick that Gordon has pulled with pizza taste tests in the past.
I felt bad for Drew, though, because Drew's pizza comes out first, then we get the frozen pizza, and then we get Michelin star chef Gordon Ramsay serving one of the most impressive looking thin crust pizzas I've ever seen.
Which one do you like the most? Is it mine?
Huh? Interesting.
Oh, I'm sorry, I can't run your restaurant. I've got a few... of my own actually that need attention.
Drew was okay though, wasn't he? Come on, everyone.
Wasn't bad, like. So, yes, you guessed correctly. This is the frozen pizza. So, your reward is an entirely new restaurant.
Yay!
So, we come back day four, they say. They've added in two bay windows. This is at least a month of a turnaround. Come on. So, give us a rundown of the new decor. What did you guys think of it?
The new signage outside I thought was a big step down from the previous one. It has like a sort of a fun, bring your kids on down, we've got a kids menu at Wimpy kind of thing. Like it's too fun for like a 50-year-old Italian restaurant. The inside was all right though. It's the usual trick of...
pine and white.
We've got rid of some furniture, we've made everything white, and we've put some red and white tablecloths on so it looks a little bit more diner-y.
I thought the fact that the bar got refurbed was like potentially messing with their main source of income because like these were, you know, red carpets, leather bar stools, you know, mahogany countertops, and now it's like super bright pine kind of lawn furniture... with the bright Italian flags everywhere. I didn't think this would be the place that guys clocking off at the mill wanted to go have a beer afterwards. I don't know, maybe... because when they... I think they come back later on and it's gone back to normal. The bar bit, at least, anyway. I don't know.
The tiled floors are nice, at least.
Yeah.
Better than that dirty carpet.
I actually really liked the remodel. I thought it looked 1,000 times better. Yeah. I agree that it's weird to remodel the bar, but it is still a bar.
Yeah, so... it kind of felt like Gordon wanted to make it into one... business, yeah, as opposed to...
It looks cohesive now, and it definitely looks like an Italian restaurant.
There's no denying it's an improvement. It looks definitely way better than it did before.
Yeah. There's only one way they should have introduced the new bar. This is draft beer heaven. I think as well with the kind of bright, clean atmosphere of it, and the fact that you've not got the carpeted floors, I think that's a way of them saying... now, clean the restaurant.
Yeah, yes. Clean the floors.
Clean the floor, because it's all white now.
We now break away from the tried and true narrative structure of Kitchen Nightmares, because now it should be time to look at the new menu and get ready for a launch night, right?
Yeah.
What do we get instead?
We get a pizza eating contest.
The first annual Casa Roma pizza eating challenge.
Okay, so we'll do the new menu and we'll do the opening night and then we'll have the pizza eating challenge as part of opening night, right?
I think there was an idea that there was bad blood about the restaurant in the area, and this is when he's like, look... community challenge. We've given out 4 free pizzas.
Right.
All is forgiven for the last 50 years of bad service.
So we just smash cut to the middle of this contest happening now. We don't see the pizzas getting made or where they come from. There's just suddenly 5 guys sat down eating pizza.
Now, am I so skeptical that I couldn't even enjoy the first annual Casa Roma pizza eating challenge, but it didn't feel legitimate to me.
No, from cheating going on.
From the get-go, Gordon starts by going, on your marks, eat. That's a false start. Someone's getting the signal there. Someone's getting an advantage.
We had cheating as well from the owners, no less.
Yes.
What are they doing entering this contest?
So,
yeah, I win, Mom. I win.
Jeremy finally does something in this episode.
Yes. He eats pizza.
Eating a pizza, but he can't even do that right because he's like, oh, I'm kind of full, so I'm tapping out, and my brother's going to take over.
Oh, twin magic. That's ridiculous.
Yes, you can't have to. Beard meets food doing these food challenges and he's like, yeah, you know what, I'm gonna stop and someone else is gonna finish it for me.
I mean, that makes it even more shameful that they lose. At least it doesn't work.
It is the idea. It's like, kind of, hey, look, we're just normal people. We can be beaten in a pizza eating contest. Why don't you bring the family down and eat in our restaurant? We promise it's better than before. Seriously, it's nicer, right? Okay, come on, come.
They have a massive trophy for the winner as well.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Like a big bowling trophy, yeah. Essentially.
And I will say, that man sweated right through his shirt, so that was a hard-earned victory.
I'm pretty sure he's a wrestler now, that guy.
Or at least a professional competitive eater of some sort. It's time for the reopening, and we've got... Oh, yeah, by the way, I developed a new menu. Here it is.
Oh, here it is. Okay.
This felt wrong. Like, I obviously don't think that Gordon usually is that involved in these dishes that come out, but this felt like he hadn't even glanced at them. This looked like a line of a hospital food. It didn't look like...
It looked bad.
Yeah. They looked dreadful. We got some bright orange chicken wings. The stuffed mushrooms look literally as bad as they did before.
Yeah.
They look fucking ice cold.
So there's like a lot of bread, and like it's that real kind of cheap, nasty, you know, thick crust but thin inner bread. It just didn't feel like he was going to make a, you know, nice Italian sandwich or whatever. But yeah, it seems all right with it, I guess.
No, not at all. The cops show up. Not like that. There are cops showing up for the dinner.
These are firemen, not cops, Joe.
Why are they dressed like cops?
We get a coming up that's like, coming up after the break. Fire. This is unbelievable. Yeah, some firemen come to dinner, I guess.
Yeah.
I think they're wearing their office garb.
Okay, really look like cops.
They did, because they played Miserloo knockoff, like it was some sort of fiction thing there.
And then they get served raw chicken wings.
Ooh.
And they immediately notice that they're raw and they get sent back, so they get given a new plate of chicken wings, which are also raw.
Yeah, I don't know like how Gordon was able to repair relations with the firemen of America to the point where they'll burn stuff for him whenever he wants after this fiasco. But that's bad. The fact that the first time they're undercooked, the second time they're undercooked and cold.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is easy to believe that they just sat there and then someone said, chicken wings? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there they are.
I mean, that's happened to me before where, like, I remember, like, once, and my mum returned it on my behalf because it was like, you know, I was like 12 or 13 being taken out for a meal in a cafe. I ordered shepherd's pie and it was cold.
Oh.
And it went, I've told the story before, I'm sure. I went back like 4 times. Every time it was like colder.
Oh.
To the point where I was just like, you know what? I'm sorry for bothering everyone. Like, I won't eat anymore. It's okay. Like.
And that's what they wanted from you by doing that. Yeah. They just wanted you to apologize for ordering it.
But it's just, it's quite a strange situation where, I don't know, I think that the firemen, you know, no one's saying to defund the firemen. Firemen are kind of generally respected and beloved, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, like, don't kill them. Like, you know, but judging from this way this show goes, you might need them at some point, like.
And this just isn't how it's meant to be going. When you have the young chef that was overlooked, we fired the head chef, now you're going to step up and...
New menu as well?
Oh, you're actually not very good. We just assumed that because you weren't as bad as the other guy, we assumed you were great.
And, like, the new sous chef, it's just Jimmy. And he's making calzones.
Yeah, did you see those calzones?
Giant calzones.
Did I? Oh, spoiler alert for Dish of the Day later. But when Gordon comes in and goes, Jimmy, make the calzones smaller. They're so big, you're going to run us out of business. And they are huge.
Ginormous.
I refuse to believe if the chicken rings are raw in the middle,
right?
No way is the calzone warm in the middle.
No way.
Let me have this. Sorry, let me pretend.
Nah, the center of that is ice cold, my dude.
And Jesus Christ, never before have I seen someone desperately trying to repatriate himself to his new homeland, but Gordon comes in with the calzone and goes, this is so big, it could fill an entire football end zone. And that was actually a point earlier where he was like, they've been here since Super Bowl Sunday. Since Super Bowl Sunday.
When is that exactly?
I know. Definitely.
I watched it.
Ages ago, that was. Ages ago. I saw when they put the ball in the end zone. It's almost as if you had a pizza contest and then a different type of pizza contest instead of training your chefs. Confidence without skill means literally nothing in this business, I think.
And more evidence that the head chef role is cursed, because Drew is immediately freaking out and shouting at people. He's got a bad attitude all of a sudden now.
But didn't you hear? They're playing the good music now.
So it's time to... Let's asking now.
In spite of everything, they managed to pull through, and there's pizzas coming out. They're bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
Either these wait staff are shrinking out of embarrassment and these pizzas are getting bigger.
Actually annoyed me that the narration gives Gordon the credit for this. Like, Drew finds his rhythm eventually and starts sending the dishes out. And the narration's like, Drew finally manages to bring it together by finally following Chef Ramsay's advice.
Yeah, Gordon comes out for a little peek and he's like, yeah, wow, impressive turnaround. I'll take your word for it, because I literally didn't see a single smiling customer. And they always cut to smiling customers. Yeah. You know, it's a great idea. They should have just made the bar bigger and served pizzas at the bar.
Right.
Because I knew a big pub in Galway that at one point during my time in university, they're like, hey, we serve pizzas now.
Yep.
They doubled an already roaring trade. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Sometimes the pizzas would be a little bit overcooked.
Yep.
And we wouldn't mind because we're in a pub and we're drunk ordering pizza.
That's it. You've got a very successful bar combined with a failing Italian restaurant. And their idea is to, let's make this a slightly better Italian restaurant instead of just making it a bar that does bar food.
Yeah.
You know, if they were doing pizzas and burgers here, they'd have a way better time and probably a better chance of actually making good food as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this kind of ends very much feeling without an ending.
We do see the firefighters leave. They like get in their truck and they're like, let's go home, boys. Pretty sure you're not allowed to do that.
Let's go purge ourselves, boys.
Normally though, we get at the end of these episodes a little summary from Gordon where he comes out and cracks a couple of jokes and goes home. Nothing.
Oh, we did.
Yeah, holy mackerel.
That's it.
He says, that is the biggest calzone I've ever seen. Holy mackerel.
But that was all ADR'd, wasn't it? We don't see him leave the restaurant.
Yeah, he got out as quickly as possible there. Before we get into the autopsy and the post-mortem, as it were, I'd like to ask you for your dishes of the day and your MVP of the restaurant. I'll start. Give me the big mushroom calzone and I will anoint Jimmy as the MVP so he can make me the two big mushroom calzone.
Yep.
Just to look at it.
Just to look at maybe and be like, wow, look at that architectural feat.
You got me onto the plain mushroom pizza, Adam.
Oh,
it's
baby.
It's a fine thing indeed.
Good. This is a tough one this time.
It's pretty slim pickings.
There was very little, if any, of the food that I looked at and was like, I could eat that. Can I pick Gordon's pizza?
That's the dish on the day.
It's going to have to be that. Gordon's pizza for the dish of the day.
And he sneakily snuck in the meat if you're a vegetarian. Trick you.
MVP, again, I don't really feel like anyone was the heart of this episode.
No.
Like, the only person that I really, really felt for is Ashley the server, who, like, I relate so hard to that sort of like tears in the eyes levels of embarrassment where you're like, I can't believe it's this shoddy
and
I'm the one getting it in the net from the customers.
Yeah. And the person who actually has a financial stake in it, they're unmoved.
Hiding behind a door.
Literally standing back in the kitchen.
So frustrating. Joe, how about you?
Slim
pickings, might I remind you.
Yeah, I mean, MVP, I think I would agree on Ashley.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Dish of the day? I mean, there was a child who ordered chicken nuggets and chips after the menu rebrand, whatever.
Yay.
We never actually saw it, but I just don't think they could fuck that up too bad.
Oh,
so
I don't know.
I'm going to go with that.
The chicken reputation in this restaurant.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Fireman killingly
surely
good.
Surely just cooked from frozen, like pre-cooked, right?
I don't know. I reckon these are probably some pink nuggets on the inside.
No.
Now, I did see on YouTube that there was a little 5 minutes someone had snipped out from Kitchen Nightmares Revisited.
Yes.
There was a return a year later.
Yeah, I watched that.
So you didn't watch that. So yeah, Joe, take us through what happened at the revisit and any further details you found out online.
So shortly after Gordon left, they reverted back to their original menu.
Oh, that'll do it.
I don't know why they would do that, because it's not like they have the same chef even.
Nope.
Yeah.
And no one this time was like, we've always done it this way. We love our food. Like,
they
no
loved
one
the rebrand.
Yeah, no one was protective of the menu.
Don't get that
the sign that
all.
Says pizzeria would mean you should probably just have pizza,
right?
Yeah. Don't overcomplicate things. When Gordon goes back to revisit, he discovered that Drew had left and been replaced by a new chef.
This was wild.
You know what happens here then?
Yeah, I watched the 5 minute segment of that and my mind was blown, because they're like, oh, it's a familiar face. And from the back, I was like, is that the lad who won the pizza eating contest?
No.
It's not Eric, is it? Is he back?
No, it's
better.
It's Q from Sebastian's.
What?
Yeah.
Yep.
Whoa.
Apparently, Nyla, the owner, saw the episode of Sebastian's and was like, oh, he seems good.
Because Q could throw the dough. Like, he was confident as a pizza chef. Yeah.
So, and then he came in to visit their restaurant, I guess as some kind of, like, I don't know, post-Kitchen Nightmares.
Wow.
Support group.
Yeah, literally.
And they're on a big WhatsApp together.
Yeah, and she just offered him the job. So,
wow.
He did recount what happened with Sebastian from his viewpoint. He's like, yeah, one day he just disappeared.
Whoa, in a puff of smoke.
Lamb.
Okay.
So after that, it was then revealed that the owner, Nyla, was faking positive reviews online.
Oh, no.
That don't fly in Lancaster, baby.
Isn't good. They briefly rebranded the restaurant a few different times, actually, to AV Roadhouse Restaurant Bar and Grill, and then later CR Roadhouse. But the rebrandings didn't help, and they ultimately closed in 2017.
Well, they hung on a lot. That's 10 years after the fact.
That's a good stretch.
It seems that the way they kept going, it's actually quite smart. They lent into the whole community aspect. So they did things like they'd have like Halloween parties, or they'd show the big sports game. Mm-hmm. And they'd basically have a karaoke and like live bands and stuff.
Bar-themed stuff.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, when it's a small town like that, people just want a spot to go and do stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Yeah, good job.
So that's the restaurant, but I thought I'd check up on Nyla, the owner, and see what she got up to.
Oh,
sorry, was there any info on why it closed? Or just ran out of steam?
No, I think they just chose to close. So I think it just was slowly losing money,
and then
they closed. And yeah, I think it was probably partly due to the fact that no one really liked the food, I guess.
Yeah,
that's true.
So Nyla, after retiring from the restaurant business, she became a bookkeeper. When I searched for Nyla Kitchen Nightmares, the very top result was her personal Facebook page.
Okay.
So I thought I'd check it out. I will say off the bat, she's a TERF, so we can be mean about her.
Okay, cool. Right, gloves are off then.
Just in case what I now come to talk about means like you feel bad about her or anything, or like we shouldn't make fun of her. No, it's fine.
I kind of feel bad that I haven't made fun of her more now.
Yeah. So I searched her page for the word yummy, and I found some instances of her cooking.
Oh no! Just reading the caption alone on that.
No.
Oh, Joe, God, no! No!
Who would like to describe?
Okay, that is a spam, cactus, and egg burrito. Yummy!
Spam, cactus, and egg. That looks like vomit. I know we say that a lot, but
it really looks
like it has been regurgitated onto
it's
a flatbread.
It's almost like we shouldn't take words of what someone like her says is normal for granted.
Yeah.
Good.
It should
grief.
Scrutinize it with a great deal of detail.
The chunks of spam are so large.
So big. The chunks of cactus are so big.
Yeah, there's a lot of cactus.
Wow, you brought in the L.A. Beast references hard this
I
episode.
I did.
Yeah, honestly.
But that wasn't the only food of hers I wanted to show you. Now, I hope you're both feeling okay, settled in the stomach, because this next one is worse.
Here's what happened. Your episode didn't do it enough, so you brought in your goons to do the heavy lifting.
I'm looking between my fingers here, folks. I'm so nervous
about this. Come on. 3 times in 1 week now. Come on.
No! What? Folks, it's a brain.
It's a brain cake, yummy, which appears to be raw sausages linked together.
She's something of an artist. I'll give her that.
I'm gonna have to give that brain cake a 1 out of 5.
She made them sausages look like brains. I can't deny that.
Why?
It looks like raw chicken to me. It just, yeah.
Well, I should say the caption specifically said my brain cake.
Yeah.
Like, she is
and
proud
yummy.
Of this.
Yeah, well, you can take the owner out of the incredibly dangerous restaurant, but you can't take the incredibly dangerous restaurant out of the owner, it seems. Well, that qualifies certainly as an ending, I guess.
Oh, God. What a note to end things on.
And as always, if you've got your own Kitchen Nightmares story, a recommendation for an episode that you'd like to see us cover, we will do Amy's Baking Company at some point, don't worry. But as well as that, we're after your stories about meeting Gordon Ramsay, your favourite Gordon facts, and any recommendations for all things Gordon Ramsay in the extended Ramsay universe. As always, it's rawpod@gmail.com. That's it'srawpod@gmail.com. And if you've got an extended story or take, it may be read out on The Walk-In when we next come back in and have a little chat about your lovely messages and emails. So once again, it's rawpod@gmail.com. Don't forget to check us out on all the socials and leave a rating and review wherever you get your audio. It helps the show immensely. And if you've got someone in your life who may want a little dose of a kitchen nightmare in their ears, send them our way. It's Raw Pod, available wherever you get your audio. But until next time, it's a goodbye from me, Kevin.
Me, Joe.
And me, Adam.
And we'll see you next time on It's Raw.
I can't stop looking at that brain.
Yeah, let's get that off.
Wow, what can I say, folks? I did everything humanly possible to help this restaurant succeed, from forcing an unprepared sous chef to step up, to putting on a pizza eating contest. It was just up to the staff to take the ball all the way to the end zone, which is, of course, an American football reference, something I know lots about. Now, I'm off to try and pry this Parma ham off the palm of my hand.